As spring approaches, we think about hauling out that bicycle and tuning it up for the first ride of the year. It's a tradition that goes back a long way, and from the beginning, Wisconsin has been a hotbed of bicycling.
This month is the anniversary of the birth of a Wisconsinite who was one of the sport's pioneer racers. Here to tell us about Walter Sanger are Nick Hoffman and Jesse Gant, co-authors of the book Wheel Fever. Nick, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And Jesse, good to have you along, too.
Thanks for having us.
Well, let's start with Wisconsin and its background with bicycling. What made Wisconsin a fertile ground, Jesse, for the bicycle craze?
A lot of the same things that are driving the present interest in cycling and the explosion of interest in the sport drove it back in the late 19th century. It began with a good natural terrain for the sport. Wisconsin is sort of blessed as being a fairly flat state, no major mountain ranges to pass, and very scenic often, and so a lot of the early riders and travelers through the state noted the natural scenery and the natural topography of the state being really a good thing for the early sport. It's also been home a long time to the manufacturing aspect of the sport. There's been factories producing bikes in Wisconsin since the 1870s and 1880s, and a long tradition of just tremendous enthusiasm among state residents for the bicycle that stretches back 150 years.
And the guy we're going to talk about today is a notable from Wisconsin bicycling history, Walter Sanger. Nick, who was he?
Yeah, Walter Sanger has kind of been lost in history. At the time in the 1890s, when he was at his peak for bicycle racing, he was known internationally as one of the greatest competitors in the sport. We can find his name in Australian, even Jamaican newspapers talking about his exploits on the track.
So what set him apart? What made this guy so famous?
Well, he has a lot of really fun folklore about his story. And when he was a young boy, supposedly he broke horses on his father's farm by bicycle. He would race alongside them to break horses. So he came into bicycle racing at a time when most guys are kind of these skinny, lanky guys. And Walter Sanger was described as being Herculean. He's kind of built like a fullback in the NFL today. So he had this raw strength that just wasn't seen before.
Right. And I looked him up on the internet today. I don't know if it was Wikipedia. He seemed to have enormous thighs,
yeah,
which I suppose is true of most champion bicyclists, but he did look Herculean.
Yeah. He's, again, has a very rare build for that time period in the sport. So much so that he was very famous in his races, that he would hold back until the very last stretch. And then because he had this raw strength, he would try and burst forward ahead of his competitors to the finish line, which worked very well for him.
And Jesse, what were the races like back when Walter Sanger was racing?
Think of a modern sporting event today, a stadium packed with cheering admirers, thousands of people in the grandstands, usually good weather because it's usually a sport that has to have good weather outside in order to work, and sponsorships, lots of corporate interests. You know, Sanger was riding bikes that were produced locally by companies in the state in his name, so he had his own brand bicycles. Just a lot of excitement at these events.
Yeah, there was a meet in Appleton in 1896 that drew over 8,000 spectators. This was the big sport in the state during that period.
Wow. And what kind of bikes were people racing on?
They're racing on drop bar safety bicycles, very similar to what we ride today. And even back then, they were always looking for ways to sort of shortcut the weight of their bicycles. So some of these guys are racing on bamboo frame bicycles like Hughesby Manufacturing in Milwaukee or BB Manufacturing in Racine that had wooden frame bicycles. So they're looking for very light model bicycles like a carbon frame today.
Single speed, massive front gear, high speeds. Yeah.
What does the drop bar part mean?
It's their handlebars, so they're kind of crouched over when they're riding.
And with the horns?
Yep, yep, exactly.
Okay, well, that hasn't changed that much then,
not
in
really
a way.
At all.
No, the bicycle of the 1890s is very similar to the bicycle of today.
And you said he was famous for having these bursts of speed. How successful was he? Did he always win?
Not always, but eventually people caught on to that tactic. In 1896 in Appleton, there was another very successful racer named Eddie Bald who beats him three times in a row, kind of waiting for that burst of speed. But early on, it really worked well. He won many national and world championships. He would travel overseas to London and won races at London's legendary Herne Hill. So this guy was really traveling all over the world for racing. There was a circuit of professional riders. They would just hop on trains and go from city to city for these big meets.
One of his great triumphs early in his career was a race where he was so far ahead at the end of the race that his pedal fell off, and he managed to get off the bike, hammer it back on, and then finish the race and still win. So this really, you know, built his reputation.
That's
early
amazing. I'm curious about what pro bicycle racers back then wore. What was the apparel like, Jesse?
They're wearing fairly skimpy clothes, like a tank top style suit with shorts. You don't want to create too much drag as you're going down the track.
And there was no spandex.
There's no spandex. So these,
this is pretty close.
So. Yeah, this is probably, I would imagine, a light wool or cotton, mm-hmm. a canvas sort of outfit.
Very colorful. There's, mm-hmm. It's all about the spectacle for early bicycle racing.
And there are images in the books where they're posing, you know, very muscular and looking yeah. very manly in their in their outfits.
Yeah.
So there's that great image of Otto Ziegler on a stand after a race posing with his arms above his head and
flexing.
Yeah, flexing his muscles.
It's interesting because I guess that's a cultural shift. You don't think of bicycle racers as the he-men of sports today.
yeah. But back then, they definitely were. But this is a time period when the three big sports are baseball, boxing, and bicycling. And they all overlap very, very much. There were a lot of fights even on the early bicycle tracks. There's a great rivalry between a team called the Milwaukee Push, which was the team for the Milwaukee Wheelmen, and the Chicago Cycling Club. And they would follow each other throughout the Midwest, always looking to go head-to-head. But fights during their races were very common. Walter Sanger, even in one instance on a banked track, actually ran a guy off the track and he died. He ran into, was it a tree or part of the grandstand?
Some terrible accident, but these things happened all the time in these sort of races. They're often
really?
Very brutal.
People died in the races all the time?
Well, high speeds and then terrible crashes involving multiple bicyclists at a time.
Did they wear helmets?
No.
No helmets.
There you go. Yeah. I guess. Is that what it was about? No helmets?
No helmets, yeah. Yeah, it was, wasn't even really, well, it was thought of a little bit at the time for those people experimenting with safety, but not those daredevil cyclists who are competing.
So it sounds like they were kind of rowdy, these races.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And sometimes they would go on for multiple days. Those famous six-day races were just kind of starting during this time period. But the crowds were very much into it. They were chanting the names of their famous, the racers that they were following. It was really a scene.
Oh.
Sanger's chant was, "Who wears the wooden shoes? Wally." And
it's a terrible chant.
It is a really bad chant.
Yeah. So this is a reference to his, you know, physical prowess, the heavy feet, and the power that he's bringing to his races, but also a sort of ethnic slur because he was a German rider, and this was associated with like an old world custom of the clogs back in Europe. So
yeah, they all had great nicknames. There was a man named Ted Lawson who was the Terrible Swede. Walter Sanger was the Pride of Milwaukee, Wooden Shoes Sanger. So these guys were really heralded.
One of the Andre brothers was known as the Flying Badger here in Wisconsin.
No, that's a good one. The Flying Badger. So speaking of clogs, what did bike racers wear on their feet?
They're wearing very simple athletic shoes. Some of the guys are already strapping their feet down to the pedals. So again, there's not a lot of changes from that early racing, besides maybe the violence of the sport.
What about women? Were women involved in the scene at all?
So there's a famous example in our book of Green Bay or Appleton. Somewhere.
Green Bay meet,
Green Bay meet where women racers are holding a women's only race and nobody comes and the prize money is eliminated through corruption, I think, and the hotels are empty in town and it really kind of fails. This is a very sort of masculine sort of world and the male racers draw most of the attention at this time. And that's a long story of exclusion built into cycling from the very start. You know, League of American Women banned women riders for a long time, and were not welcome for quite a while for the first early decades of the sport.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And when did women, I guess, sort of get more of their fair share of that pie?
It starts right away. I mean, there are continued challenges to that sort of rule in bicycling, but not until the 1890s with the safety frame, the similar technology that Sanger is riding, do they really become one of the key demographics in early cycling.
And as far as Walter Sanger goes, how long did his career last and what happened to him?
He's active in that 1890s period of the bicycle boom. But like many people, he starts to get distracted with the new technologies coming up. He kind of wanes in his career around 1896. He starts to lose a lot of major meets. He's still competing into the late 1890s. But like everybody else, he gets caught up in the automobile and motorcycle craze. He briefly races motorcycles around Milwaukee, but eventually settles down on the Upper East Side of Milwaukee and opens a little car dealership.
A car dealership? Yeah. I thought you were going to say a bike store.
No. All these guys, the manufacturers, the racers, they all transition over to automobiles by the early 1900s.
Do you think we still remember him? I mean, we're talking about him now on the radio, but is he still remembered in Wisconsin as a pioneer and a guy that we should know about?
Not really. He had an unfortunate death. I mean, his obituary did make it in the newspaper, but he died on December 6, 1941. So the coverage is about Pearl Harbor in the Milwaukee paper. And he kind of, I mean, he's in there that day, but isn't really covered in detail. But in the 1960s, when the Wisconsin Sports Hall of Fame is created, he's in the first class inducted alongside Curly Lambeau. So at least during that period, people still remembered him as being that important to be in the first class and alongside one of Wisconsin's most iconic and famous sports figures.
I'm so glad to hear about him today. Nick, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Jesse, thank you.
Thanks so much.
That was Nick Hoffman and Jesse Gant, co-authors of the book Wheel Fever, How Wisconsin Became a Great Bicycling State. They were with us to talk about Wisconsin legend Walter Sanger.